Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to another episode of the Dirty Birds and Brews podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Knight, at Falcohol Kevin, joined by a wonderful guest. He's back. He is Thor Nystrom from Fantasy Pros over at Thor KU on the Twitter X, whatever it is. Thor, welcome back. I know it's been a very busy few weeks post-draft. Thanks for coming back on the show. How are you doing?
Thanks, man. I'm doing well. It seems like the Vikings and the Falcons were two of the teams that kind of stole the show, stole the discourse after that. So you and I, we had a very interesting weekend and post-week, even outside of the draft work itself. So I'm fascinated to talk about it with you today, Kev.
Yeah, and well, it makes perfect sense to have you on, not only for your wonderful work with the UDFA class, which, you know, for those that don't know, Thor does the Thor 500, and he does scout all of these players. So if you want takes on a lot of these guys, you know, if you're not, I'm trying to remember where the Falcons pulled some of these guys from, like, Mid-American Nazarene. You know, I don't know what you had to do to get your hands on that Mid-American Nazarene tape, Thor, but
as long as it's in PFF Ultimate,
yeah. But he does great work on that. But also, you know, it makes sense to talk to Thor because in a lot of ways, the Falcons and Vikings drafts are kind of intertwined, and a lot of people look at them kind of as like mirrors of each other because these are two teams that we're considering a lot of the same players. Obviously, Kirk Cousins goes, you know, between the two teams this offseason. So it's definitely fascinating. I'm curious to talk with you about all that stuff as well. Before we dive in, folks, real quick, want to bring you a word from today's sponsor, betonline.ag. Folks, BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. You can get all the latest stats, news, and scores available as you follow your favorite teams to the playoffs and beyond. I know we got a lot of Braves fans on here. I know you guys are excited about the Braves season. I know that may be the only Atlanta team that can bring you happiness this year. So if you want to bet on them, you know, that's maybe the safest bet, but it is Atlanta sports, so probably nothing is safe. But if you want to bet on it, guys, you can get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. So what are you waiting for, folks? Head to that website today, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, Thor, well, we did a great show pre-draft where we went through a lot of scenarios for the Falcons, and we didn't talk about this one more than in passing, like, oh, Penix to the Falcons. I mean, I think I said, like, I think they really do like him. I just, you know, I think it's going to be hard for them to actually end up with him given, you know, when he's likely to be drafted and all this. Well, you know, clearly it shows how much I know, because they end up taking him at 8 and, you know, shocking pretty much everyone. I know that other than, I can't remember if it was Schefter or who it was that was really on the, like, you know, they really do like Penix at 8, but apparently rap that sheet. Was, yeah, rap sheet. It was, yeah, it was, you know, one person kind of figured it out and everybody else was like, nah, that's not going to happen. So, you know, congratulations to whoever sourced that. You did a great job, but maybe the Falcons just leaked that out there because there's like, yeah, no one's going to believe it anyway. Who cares? But yeah, I mean, I know you were pretty shocked by the pick too. So, I mean, what was your reaction to that selection? I know the Falcoholic Live draft party was pretty stunned.
Yeah, my initial react, it's the first thing on a live broadcast where that ever left me speechless. Mm-hmm. Like it, and it took me a second to sort of collect myself to be able to respond. That some people were made it like a meme on Twitter, you know, my reaction, whatever, just because it, you know, you'll see. Let me put it this way. The Bo Nix pick in his slot was a far more egregious reach, if you want to look at it like is a worse pick in a vacuum in terms of that. But the Penix pick, what made it wild, of course, was the Cousins contract, yeah, what, 5-6 weeks before that. And that was the thing that was really hard to sort of wrap your head around in the moment, is like you have this enormous war chest of resource of your cap space, and then you have the other one of your top 10 draft slots. And it was like heading into the offseason, of course, it'd be like, We need the quarterback. We have to fix the quarterback and then the defensive positions, right? And then augmenting some other ancillary offensive ones. But it's like if you put both those, you know, enormous resources, you funnel them into the one position, some other ones are going to be sort of on the vine. So you know, I'm interested in what you've heard on that, Kev, because I put in my write up on Fantasy Pros. I put I'm awaiting the 30 for 30.
yeah.
Because I just like that. And, you know, I've heard the explanation like everybody else. But like, have you heard anything beyond that? Like, because I'm just so curious, and the justifications by Fontenot afterwards, I'm still trying to parse together. How did the Cousins thing happen? And then 5-6 weeks later, then the Penix thing happened. I still don't feel like I have a great idea of that.
Yeah, I mean, basically what it is that they were at first not sure that Penix would make it to 8. I think, you know, and it does seem like the NFL as a whole was higher on Penix than the media was. So, you know, I mean, maybe they were right about that in terms of him being there or not, but you know, it's obviously strange to see a huge investment in a veteran and then immediately draft another quarterback. I think, you know, Fontenot should probably just shut his mouth about the, oh, if he doesn't play for 5 years and it's fine. No, that's not fine. That is not fine. Don't say that. No one's going to be happy about that. But what it is that they knew that they couldn't go through another rebuild. Like, fans wouldn't tolerate it. And they needed to start winning now because Arthur Blank is just fed up with losing. So that's the first thing on their mind was, we need to make sure we do whatever we can to win the playoffs, like win the NFC South this year. That's our top goal. And so that's why they signed Cousins. They wanted to get the best quarterback they could that could come in and make this team a playoff contender, and start winning some damn football games, basically, which is what I've been clamoring for. So I can't be upset about that. However, I think the whole time they sort of, you know, and to their credit, I think they played this like masterfully. If they were trying to make sure Penix did fall to 8, they basically had all along intended to draft a successor to Cousins, because I think they really view that as a 2-year deal only, because I think they're spooked by what happened with Ryan, where, you know, his age 36 season was when he was traded out of Atlanta. So I think they know this is the time that quarterbacks sometimes start to break down. Will it happen with Cousins? I don't know. He is coming off a season-ending injury, but before that, very healthy. Same thing with Matt Ryan. So I think they got spooked by that. I think it's a little bit of an overreaction also to their failures previously at quarterback. Now, I prefer this method to the let's go send everything for Deshaun Watson method, definitely. But
yes. great point. Yeah.
Yeah. So it could be infinitely worse with that. But I think they probably overreacted a little bit to their quarterback snafus over the past few years. But also, I think they just love Penix. I think that's the simplest answer, is that they just love Penix. And that they also felt like they couldn't guarantee that they were going to get him. And they also thought that he needed some coaching, which I think is true. I think a lot of people see that Penix is an older quarterback and they're like, oh, well, he's ready to play. And like, could he come in and play? Yes. But you know, Penix has limitations. He struggles more with the middle of the field, and this offense really likes to focus on that. And you know, there's some things with handling pressure that we saw in the Michigan game that, you know, I think they might want to work on. And they clearly think that he would be well served to sit and learn for a few years. You know, I hate losing the rookie contract benefits of that, but you know, they structured the Cousins deal so that you get out in 2 years, essentially, because unless Cousins was, you know, competing for the Super Bowl, they probably weren't paying him $57.5 million, you know, in 2026. So this is, I guess, they're trying to answer the quarterback question for now and in 2 years. And I think if it all works out and Penix comes in 2026 and he's a, you know, franchise quarterback, then everybody will be happy. But I, you know, they obviously aren't going to maximize this year's roster. And I think that's what is shocking a lot of analysts and fans, is like, well, typically when you sign the veteran, the most expensive veteran quarterback you can, that signals that you're going to go all in now, especially in a bad division. And they're not doing that. They're basically trying to have their cake with Cousins, where they're like, this roster is good enough to win the NFC South, which doesn't really mean, it's not really that meaningful, but it would be more than they've done in 7 years. So maybe they think that's good enough for now. And they're like, we can secure what we really want, which is to start our Super Bowl window more like 2026. And then, you know, go on with Penix. It just seems like there's a lot of things that could go wrong with this, but it's like, I think that's the strategy. So I can kind of see the strategy now. I just think it's incredibly bold that you don't really see teams do this. And it's just rife with risk, because it's like, if this falls apart, they're not even going to be here in 2 years to see Penix. So it's like,
for sure. Yeah. And yeah, obviously that's where I was at with it too. And the confusion and, you know, a part of it too, it's like, I like Penix, you know, like
yeah, me too.
I've been watching Penix since he was at Indiana. Like I still remember that during the COVID season when he upsets Penn State and he, you know, he reaches the arm across the goal line, and you know, earlier in his career, he's more of a dual threat guy, yeah. But he really raised Indiana up. Indiana, a program that has been in the dumpster like our entire lifetime. Like yeah. It was only interesting during the Michael Penix era at Indiana. And then he goes to Washington and sort of reinvented himself after all the season ending injuries as like the more stay in the pocket passer guy. And the ball shoots out of his hand. I mean, like that, you know, let's go more to the positive side yeah. of this, like in his evaluation, like the ball detonates out of that kid's
oh, yeah.
hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. It, like he has that, you know, like someone had asked me about the 2025 quarterbacks and they asked me about Quinn Ewers. And it's like, you know, that you have that wonky motion, but Ewers still hasn't, the consistency is way off, you know, because of with the mechanics, yeah, yeah. But it shoots out of his hand as well. Penix has, it's the same, you know, it's just flipped around the other way, except he's more, it's way more consistent,
yeah.
right? And with the way that, and we've seen examples of this where, you know, Matt Stafford has the yeah. wonky, you know, sort of a thing. And obviously he got it to where it was repeatable enough for him where that pill was going wherever he wanted it, whenever it left his hand. That's the thing that you love about Penix. I don't think he's going to be leaving the pocket in the NFL, you know, the same as he did in Washington, even though he tested really well athletically. Yeah. And even though earlier in his career, you know, people didn't watch that, I can tell you that that kid was a true dual threat at Indiana, making plays out of the pocket. But, you know, the thing with him, I think both when he goes to Washington, Kalen DeBoer, of course, was the guy who he had been with at Indiana yeah, yeah, prior yeah. to that. DeBoer had the couple years stop off at Fresno State. But when they reunite, you know, I think that's what it was just, you got to stay in the pocket, kid, because we don't want the injuries. I think it's going to be the same thing in the NFL. Yeah. You need the offensive line around him. Kevin, as you know, his accuracy and the touch and the placement, it plays up when his feet are set in that yep. pocket, not moving at all. He's got that platform under him like he likes it. But when those feet start moving, you push him off the spot. You mentioned the Michigan game. You know, people were like during the live in the moment, yeah. you know, you move it back to the beginning of the year when they played Texas the game before. And it's like, oh, my God, Michael Penix. Oh, holy. Yeah. You know, he's going to be this top pick. And then the next week, you know, it's like or 10 days later, whatever,
right,
when they
right.
played in the championship, there was the total knee jerk the other way. Because like you said, Michigan, not only they were able to get after him, number one, push him off the spot, but then they also had the corners who were like jarring the receivers off the line, just disrupting the timing a little bit. Yeah. And all of a sudden, you know, it threw a king into it. Texas, their defensive backfield wasn't very good. So even if,
right.
you know, you know, even what, you know, at the times when the pressure was going to,
yeah.
you know, eventually
he was able to just sneak out. Yeah. And then it was
exactly.
And
you get that look there. That's the thing with Penix, like his arm is nasty.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, yeah. And I wish for his sake here at the start of his career, that if this is the way that had gone down, that cap space had been delineated to the defense and maybe augmenting, you know, like I said, like see if we can find a secondary receiver, see if we can find a offensive lineman on the cheaper, but like, you know, Danielle Hunter, put some of that cap space towards him. Another Viking last year, you know, that I'm very familiar with, and hitting some of these other defensive spots, but none of this is a referendum on Michael Penix. Like he doesn't have anything
right.
to do with any of this stuff.
No,
like,
exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, yeah, that was the only thing with that. But I do think Falcons fans are going to enjoy watching him. Mm-hmm. And one thing I'll say, like, you know, I don't want to give the last thing I'm going to do is give Terry Fontenot the benefit of the doubt after a couple of these draft decisions that I've seen him make. But one thing that I will say is, and Kevin, you know this, Penix has talked about this season. I credit him for it. He talked at the Senior Bowl and he's talked throughout the process about how he is making mechanical tweaks mm-hmm. to his game. You know, that motion, you know, like I mentioned, there's just so much upper body action with yeah. it. And he uses the platform. he just, the way I referred to it all pre-draft process, there was no better way that I could describe it or think about it in my head. He's like a sniper where it's like the sniper just wants that platform. He just wants it not moving. That's it. He doesn't use it for anything else. Whereas other quarterbacks, you'll see them more, the distribution of weight, the driving off of one, the torque of their torso as well when they're coming through to generate that more power. With Penix, it's literally all just it's a judge machine, right? Mm-hmm. Like the base of the judge machine don't move to generate that kind of thing. It's, you know, it's just the upper body. But like I think he is working on that kind of stuff. So with Penix there, you give him that year one to work on any of those mechanical things. You can talk me into that idea of year one, that should have been used for that, you know, at the accelerated age for sure. And I do think he is ready to play, which was one of my laments. But I also said throughout the pre-draft process that the ironing out of those mechanics and the work on those mechanics was something I absolutely wanted to see out of Michael Penix. And it's not because it's like this debilitating, nullifying thing. It's because his arm is so nasty. And sometimes, and Kevin, like you'll recall this, like watching his film, there are times where the ball will drift on him or sail on him. And it's pure mechanical stuff, right? It's like you have this bazooka that is attached to your left arm, and it's like you have to learn how to use it, right? In some ways, and that there are things that they can do, slight tweaks, modulations with it, working with him on it, where the accuracy, the placement, I think that's the thing. That ball is going to shoot out in a tight spiral every single time. Yeah. Right. But these like little tweaks, you know, I'm thinking about just as one, for instance, we were talking about the national championship game against Michigan, and it was a tough game, right? Like that Michigan defense was akin to the Georgia defenses the couple years before, right? But we're talking the nastiest of the nasty on the top. And they were obviously, that's what Michigan does to everyone. They put them into the wood chipper. But there was a couple opportunities there. And one I remember specifically was when Odunze got free out on the right. And he just sailed it. Penix just sailed it just a little bit, just over his head. Missed a big gain on that one. But I think these tweaks that they're going to make in year one, I think you could talk me into that. Year two is going to be interesting, especially if Penix goes in there. You make some of those tweaks, he's playing up even more. And he's dealing in practice, and that, you know, like you go into year two, and some of the vets on the team are like, actually, I think Michael Penix is better. Then, I mean, are you going to bench Cousins that second year? That's going to be the fascinating thing to watch heading into that. But I think year one, you could talk me into the year one. I think it's beyond that where, it's head scratching. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think to some extent, you know, I think everyone was on board with this, particularly Fontenot. And honestly, I think Raheem Morris had a ton to do with it. This was apparently what's been coming out lately is that he counseled the team when he was sort of giving his speech about becoming the head coach in 2021 after he had been the interim coach. And I think there were a lot of reasons that wasn't going to happen, obviously, considering the team wanted to move on from the whole Dan Quinn experience. But one of his things was like, we need a succession plan for Matt Ryan right now. And he was very serious about that. And that was his pitch. And they elected not to do that. And it didn't work. And now that he's back, I think his same thing was like, yes, we're signing Kirk Cousins, so we have quarterback settled right now. But I'm saying the exact same thing I'm saying to you, like from years ago, that we need the succession plan right now. And of all the guys they could have taken, you know, I think McCarthy is the other one that could have made sense, that would have made sense. But I think, you know, obviously happy it wasn't Bo Nix because I just don't think the upside's there. But with Penix, it's
that's
like
an understatement.
Yeah. I mean, I'll take any opportunity to dunk on Sean Payton, that's for sure. But you know, same. I know you will as well. Yeah. So
yes.
Like I think with Penix, at least it's like the upside is there. Like you can tell this guy has the traits and has the potential to be a very good NFL quarterback. So basically, it's like, well, we're just going to be patient and hope that does pan out because that's, you know, otherwise, it's not gonna be great, but it's a risky move. It's a bold move. It's not something I've seen, but at least it won't be boring. That's kind of my takeaway at this stage. It's not gonna be boring. So, but yeah, the rest of the Falcons draft class was less controversial. I think the round two pick was definitely shocking too, because Ruka Rororo was a guy that I liked a lot, but I was not expecting a trade up in the second round for him. And then, of course, they really focus on the defensive line for the most part the rest of the draft. And I don't know if you have thoughts on any thoughts on the like rest of this draft class, but
yeah. I had tickets on Murphy as the first defender off the board under the supposition that maybe the Falcons would pop him there. That's obviously was a big need area. You know, one of those ones we talked about on the defensive, getting that three tech guy in there, and they need the edge rusher as well, but fortifying that defensive front, and in particular a kind of player like that. And I'm interested to see their plans with Dorless as well. If he's going to be a three technique as well, it's sort of like you could decide what to do with him. He's more on the tweener side of it, but Aurora. We started calling him the Big O on our fantasy pro show because it was a tough one for me. I liked him as well, Kevin. I had him 45th on my board. They ended up taking him 35. My only surprise with that was I don't have any problems with him as a prospect. But before I say the other part, I'll just like tell you like where I'm at with him. He has every physical tool that you want. You know, you talk about like the built in the lab kit, the 6'4", 295 and 99th percentile RAS. Love all that. And a good run defender as well. The polish on him though is the one thing where, you know, he would have been a late first rounder for me if he had, or even higher, if he had that polish in the other side of his game. I'm just wondering for a guy that was at Clemson for that long, you had a good defensive coaching staff, why he didn't end up the other aspect of his game, the pass rushing, why there didn't get more polish there after those years. That's obviously something the Falcons are going to work with him on. It's obviously something that he has all the physical tool set to get there. But Clemson, this team that had all those monster defensive lines over the years, and it seems like their coaching staff has done a pretty good job with, you know, building guys up like that. That's what I'm wondering about. It's still like he is so gifted, and it's like you just want him to be a little bit more when you're considering the sum of his parts in terms of that pass rush aspect of his game, getting the more counter moves, getting more fluid between them. Just having a better feel for the attack in that, but man, you couldn't ask for better physical tools going into the NFL than he's got.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's clear that they really want the high athlete, big, strong guys out there, and they're moving back towards that more 3-4 system. So it seems like they're going for these 3-4 defensive end types. Like, I wonder if we're going to see Rook play more like 4-eye type stuff as well, you know, that sort of thing. And since he's such a good run defender, that obviously makes sense too. It's kind of funny that Dorless is like this is similar, but he's more pass rush at this point than run defending.
Yeah. If you just put them together, it'd be like Thanos with his ring.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You know, like, there you go. Perfect dude. So those two are really interesting. Then they take Trice in the third, and I like Trice. I think, you know, he's somewhat of like a one note pass rusher, but what he does it well. He's going to blast you every play. So, you know, there's that. And I'm sure
he's going to make you work for it. Isn't he? You know, and I understood why he fell down a little bit. You remember when we came into the process, people in their mock drafts had him in the late first round, but the limitations there, right, with the size and he's not a bum athlete, but he's not in the echelon of some, you know, some of these other guys we're talking about. But I love watching him because the kid's absolutely relentless. Like, he's just he throws the kitchen sink, you know, every single time, and he's getting after you right after the snap, and he's going to be attacking the you know, it's interesting with him then following Penix there, you know, and the symmetry there. But Trice, in a lot of ways, was the heartbeat of their defense on the other side during that run to, you know, the Pac-12's last season, and then getting to the championship game against Michigan. So, and by the way, on my board, I had Trice 73rd. They took him 74. So, I like the value on that pick as well. And the same thing with Dorless, by the way. Yeah. I had him 87th. They took him 109. I thought Dorless was going to go before that. You mentioned it. The pass rushing chops that kid has. Generally, those are the things where they get pulled up in terms of I was concerned before the draft. Like, you know, Dorless going to go a little bit above where I had him. Because teams fetishize that ability to get that immediate pressure. I like that. Those are probably my two favorite picks that the Falcons made in the slots that they made them in terms of like driving the value.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think Dorless, you know, probably the biggest value pick. You know, I know like, again, it's like, I didn't love the trade up for Rook just because I hate giving up 79 in this class where I feel like they could have got another impact player there. But I like Rook, so it's like I'm not mad about that pick. I don't like the trade up. But yeah, you get Dorlus, you get Trice. Clearly, there's a big emphasis on, you know, planning for the future on the interior of the defensive line as well. And that's kind of the thing I came away from this class with, was like going in, I was like, okay, this is a win now draft. We're going to get like Latu. We're going to get some instant impact guys, you know, and then they're going to go fill the rest of their needs in free agency, whatever they don't get. And we're going to go all in. Instead, it's like, oh, we get Penix and then Rook, who is very much a project kind of defensive lineman, you know? And so it's like, oh, okay, wait, this is way more future focused than I was expecting going in. So I think it kind of completes the picture a little bit with that. But yeah, I mean, I know they also brought in a number of UDFA guys that I'm not super familiar with. And I know you may have some takes on these guys. I know they brought in a couple wide receivers, quite a few corners, considering they didn't add any secondary help during the draft. Yeah, I don't know if any of these UDFAs stood out to you in your scouting at all.
Yeah, so overall, my column, you know, my favorite column, one of my favorite columns of the year to put out is the UDFA class rankings. That thing is dropping later today on Fantasy Pro. So I can't preempt myself and say too much, but I will say this, just because it's between us friends, I got the Falcons. I'll tell you where. Well, unfortunately, so I had the Falcons actually 32nd in my UDFA rankings.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's consistent with the draft, right? So.
Well, yeah, you know, like, and but they did get, let's see, I think they got three dudes that were on my pre-draft 500. Let me check this real quick. The ideology that I use with it, it's heavily juiced towards that, right? Like, there's teams where they will bring in a whole bunch of guys, but they're not the guys that were like on that draftable line. And the odds that you have of hitting on one of those guys pretty low, right? So like, I'm in that process. I'm looking, you know, the way that I envision it, you're trying to hit those. If you think of it as a second draft, right? And you think of my 500 board as the top two, there was 257 picks this year, but the top 250, let's say, is the draft as people know it. And the next 250 is what I would call the dessert draft, or, you know, and anyone's board, like, you know, that sort of next thing of it. So, I'm wanting to hit as many guys from there as possible. And, you know, as opposed to just getting sort of the rope bodies, the Falcons, the three dudes they got that were on my 500 board was Isaiah Wooden Jr., the kid from Southern Utah. He's the one that kind of, there's some intrigue there.
Did he jump like 45 inches or something?
He jumped. Yes. So he had a 44 and a half inch vertical, this kid, you know, who was 5'7", 176, but just this absolutely ludicrous vertical. And then he runs the 4.35, but with a 1.38, like the 4.35 40 is obviously extremely impressive. A 1.38 10 yard split is one where it's like, if that's true, that's
mind be like a record, right? It's close to it. Yeah,
it's one of the best that I have seen, and beyond that. So, you know, in my draft, my database that I have all the dudes in the class, like, not just, you know, the guys that get drafted, not just the UDFAs, but like going down with the receiver position, I probably had 300-400 dudes in there.
Yeah,
and with the pro day results and the combine results, they start filtering into the little testing things. Wooden finish, I believe, number one in both vertical and 10-yard split. The 40, you can't begrudge him for that because we had the record winner this year with Worthy and everything like that. But if you know, for me, in UDFA, this is the exact kind of guy you go out and get from Southern Utah coming up. People don't really know his name, but you're shooting the shot on that upside. That talent, that profile in that package is pretty unique, the explosion in that package. Bring him in, see if you got something there for the slot. See if there's something there to develop, maybe returning. And you know, maybe in year one, it's going to have to be on the practice squad. We'll just see. But you want to be shooting your shot on traits in UDFA. And that was the signing of theirs that it was big thumbs up for me. The other couple that were on my board, it was Austin Stogner from Oklahoma, and then Cole Beck later on. So I had I had Wooden 363, Stogner 372, and Kolbeck 426 on my pre-draft 500. Stogner, I had a weird relationship with in college. That sounded weird. Stogner.
Whoa, breaking news, man.
Kevin, you know, I play in I run this 50-team college fantasy football league. Mm-hmm. And so we go really, really deep with it. And Stogner was a guy year after year where he was always like getting the hype in those things. And it was like, this is the year where he breaks out in Oklahoma's offense. This year he breaks out in Oklahoma's offense. And it just wasn't really happening for him. And then he goes to South Carolina, doesn't do a lot as a receiver, and then goes back to Oklahoma. He has all the, you know, 6'6", 254, and 68th percentile athleticism. But the receiving thing has always been the bugaboo, the consistency there. And I don't know if he ever gets that or if he's going to have to basically just become like a – try to make it as like a blocking tight end that gives you stuff as a dump off guy. Because Oklahoma, the staff, they kept trying to give him more responsibility with that, and it never really took off. That aspect of his game needs work. But I will say, from the recruiting pedigree and some of these different coaches who have wanted him to take over, like good offensive minds, you know that there is the skill set there, right? And so it's just like, why hasn't that light turned on yet? But I thought that was a, you know, an interesting one. You bring him in and you just see but the frame, as far as that goes, pretty perfect for a tight end.
Those are the ones I know. Wooden in particular was one I had circled just because the testing numbers seemed just absolutely ludicrous. So when you test like that, you've always got a chance to show out in preseason and stuff like that. And if Michael Penix is QB3, he's probably going to be catching passes for Penix. So that could be preseason magic right there. That's your little preseason betting nugget right there. If Penix is throwing him passes, but Thor, really appreciate your time. Lots of great insight here on the UDFA class, of course. And then it was always good to talk about this draft. Guys, he is Thor Nystrom at ThorKU on the Twitter/X. And definitely plug the Thor 500 again and anything else you're working on.
Yeah, so check out Fantasy Pros later today, because that's where my UDFA class rankings will drop, although maybe I just ruined my chances of that with the Atlanta fan base with my ranking there. But like I said, a couple guys in there that are highly intriguing, and maybe you know you're buying lotto tickets and maybe you scratch off one and you get a winner there. Check that out. And then next week I'm doing my last one of the draft season, which is the draft hall rankings that I call it, where I combine the talent that you got in the draft UDFA and then take that against the draft equity that you spent to acquire it, and then sort of rank them up by ROI like that. I have a couple other metrics in there that I like to put in for that column, you know, just sort of, you know, it's off my board, of course, these metrics. We're not in the future, but, you know, as far as like where I see the, you know, it right now and trying to put some metrics on that. So check that stuff out on Fantasy Pros and ThorKU on the Twitter.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks, Thor, once again. Guys, I'm Kevin, IFAlcoholic Kevin. Thanks for tuning in. Please like, subscribe, leave that 5-star review, all that good stuff. Thanks again to BetOnline for sponsoring today's show. We'll be back on Wednesday with more Falcons draft offseason content as we get into the summer months here. Thanks to everyone for joining us on the Dirty Birds and Brews podcast. We will see you guys real soon. Have a great day, folks.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.